This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. In an address to his nation, Russian President Vladimir Putin spoke of the betrayal he and the Russian people feel after Wagner Group mercenaries led by Yevgeny Prigozhin would consider attacking Moscow to bring about a change in leadership. The plan was aborted, and Putin says through an interpreter,
I thank those soldiers and commanders of the Wagner Group who made the only right decision not to go to fratricidal bloodshed. And who stopped at the last line.
Prigozhin says the march was not to overthrow Putin.
I'm Stephen Portnoy at the White House. The president said the U.S. and its allies worked over the weekend to make it clear to Vladimir Putin that the West had nothing to do with the Wagner advance. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
The United States was not involved and would not get involved in these events, and that we view them as internal Russian matters.
President Biden says it's too soon to know how things will shake out in Russia.
Severe weather took aim at the Northeast today, causing more than 7,400 delayed flights and more than 1,900 cancellations, according to FlightAware. The same system produced deadly tornadoes and thunderstorms in the Midwest yesterday. WTTV-TV's Max Lewis with damage outside of Indianapolis.
Residents are now surveying the devastation after a tornado ravaged their neighborhood south of Indianapolis. Families watched in horror as the twister tore apart houses and hurled debris while it carved an unforgiving 3-mile path through Johnson County on Sunday. At least 75 homes were badly damaged.
4 cases of malaria have been reported in Texas and 1 in Florida, the first local spread of the disease in the U.S. in 20 years, according to the CDC.
Infected people can suffer fever, chills, and flu-like illness. In some cases, they can develop severe complications and die if they aren't treated, says CBS News medical consultant Dr. Celine Gounder.
Malaria is a medical emergency.
Health officials are warning doctors, especially in southern states where the weather is more friendly to the tropical mosquito that spreads malaria, to be aware of the possibility of infection and, says Dr. Gounder, learn how to treat the disease.
But if their patient has severe malaria, they should be treated with IV artesunate.
Christopher Cruz, CBS News.
The penalty phase for the man accused of killing 11 people inside a Pittsburgh synagogue is underway. The gunman could face the death penalty. More from KDKA's Melinda Roeder.
The defense says they plan to show that Bowers has a form of schizophrenia along with epilepsy that prevented his brain from making rational decisions and can lead to psychotic episodes.
This is CBS News.
Find great hires fast with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson and Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
Here's what you need to know in Western Wisconsin. Good afternoon, I'm Jimmy Cuska. The Wisconsin DNR says wildfire smoke from Canada will settle in across the state this week and has issued an air quality advisory through noon on Thursday. The DNR said that the air quality will be worst in the eastern parts of the state earlier in the week, with the heaviest smoke arriving across Wisconsin tomorrow through Wednesday. The DNR says that when air quality is this low, people should spend less time outdoors, especially children and those with health concerns. In Eau Claire County, a second lawsuit has been filed against the city of Eau Claire as it attempts to annex land from a bordering township. The town of Washington filed the lawsuit on Friday, saying that the borders are oddly shaped and nearly cuts the township in half, the city doesn't have a need for the land it's trying to take, and that it violates state law because it didn't follow procedure. This is the second lawsuit after one was filed late last year. The 438-acre piece of land was to be redeveloped into housing, but people living in the area have rallied against it. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs today, 855-954-1186.
All in two weeks. Gingras Thompson and Fox, GTWLawyers.com.
the Devil's Advocates radio show.
Why a RICO charge, counselor? What's that mean to the layperson?
It was written for Organized Crime, Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. That's where RICO comes from. The notion that you've got an entity whose purpose is to try to perpetuate some crime. It's more than just a singular event. It is a composite of kind of a corporate conspiracy doing things toward this illegal end.
Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6
on your local civic media radio station and on the app. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry
and Jane Matinere.
Before I send boxes over, I have to take all of my things out. These boxes were interspersed with all sorts of things.
But who doesn't stuff their pants and their shoes into a box full of work documents to sort out later? Every time I leave a job, that's what I end up doing with my box of work papers. Bras go in there and just, you know, and I'll sort it out later.
As Goes Wisconsin, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
It's what's on tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5. The Tap. 93.5. The Tap.
Of global warming.
So describing it as Kentucky Fried Test Tubes probably doesn't help?
Probably not.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, some good news. You may remember last year there was the potential of a strike, rail workers not having sick days, and we went through all of that. We went through the fact that every working person should have sick days, and I thought the Biden administration did a poor job of moving that message. I would have liked them to say, we couldn't get it here, but we're going to make sure everyone gets sick days and created a movement out of that. So on Friday, when I saw the story coming out of the IBEW that they had successfully negotiated sick days for their rail workers, I'm like, how'd you do that? And how do we do it for all working people? And that's why I've asked Danielle Eckert to come talk with us. Danielle is the IBEW's Director of Government Affairs. If you want to check out their website, IBEWGOV.org, we'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Danielle, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me today.
So let's start with this. How'd you do that? Because it seemed like the rail companies were dug in and, no, we're not. You're getting nothing and you'll like it. How'd you do it?
Okay. So the trajectory for IBEW when it comes to sick days, and especially the craft unions who work in the shop, is a little bit different from some of the other labor organizations. A little background about me. I am actually a locomotive electrician by trade. I was working in the industry in 2019 before coming to Washington, D.C. and filling the role that I have now. So I have some personal experience of what it took to get us here, what's been happening in the industry, and what we're looking at moving forward, especially with the administration and some of the allies that we have in Congress. So as some of you may know, the trajectory of rail negotiations is quite long. I remember submitting what we wanted to see in this contract way back in 2018. They pulled membership. And this is prior to their new operating model called Precision Scheduled Railroading. So we weren't seeing the same cuts in the industry at that time that we are seeing now. Members weren't in the same mood as we are now, and the the challenges that they are now facing when it comes to sick leave wasn't in existence whenever we first began negotiations. So when we submitted something called Section 6, high on our priorities was not these 7 sick days. It was more the traditional wages, work rules, and benefits. Now, fast forward, IBEW in the scheme that the Class 1 railroad carriers have implemented, called Precision Scheduled Railroading, have lost about half of their freight rail membership from cuts in the industry. And in order to make up from those workforce reductions, rail carriers no longer had the same attendance policies that railroaders had used for over 50 years. So typically what would happen prior to precision schedule railroading, although not acceptable, is if you needed time off, you were able to take that time unpaid. Not acceptable, but you wouldn't face disciplinary action unless you were above the shop average. So right. They would average out all of the sick days of everybody, and typically it was like 1 or 2 days a month, and you wouldn't be disciplined for that. Well, fast forward to 2019, 2020, 2022, you take 1 sick day, technically you're outside of the attendance policy and they can discipline you.
Right, so because if I'm not mistaken, the reason for that is that they've been gutting employees and they're at the bone already. So someone taking a day off really does, you know, disrupt their operation because they don't have enough people because they made those choices. Am I getting that right?
To give you a little bit more, I'm actually right now a furloughed electrician. I'm about 45 on the roster. I have not been called back yet. So they have devastating cuts to the industry, and especially our craft saw devastating cuts. So they weren't able to make up for those cuts, and they still have people on the furlough roster. You hear, we're trying to make up for the cuts that we made, but in reality, we still have members not back to work. They have not made up for attrition, and the result of that is you are running so lean, any issue causes a reverberating effect that causes freight rail. It causes issues with interstate commerce. So when the pandemic came happened, they had started this process of cutting everybody, and then they realized that they could no longer allow people to take time off work without pay. And that's whenever we started to see these really strict discipline policies. And as we know, railroaders are essential workers, so it's expected that if you cannot get to work in the snow by car, you're walking to work. There is nothing that should stop you from going to work when you're a railroader. The expectation is that you will be there because there's nobody to replace you, and especially now because of the reduction in workforce.
No, and I've talked about this with other unions. You know, I remember as a kid, the railroad used to have, you know, 7, 8, 10 people on a train. You know, now they're down to 2, want to go down to 1. At some point, I fully expect them to say, we don't need anybody on the train. We'll let a robot do it. And these decisions that these pencil pushers make, you know, on paper may sound like a great idea. Precision scheduled railroading sounds wonderful until you put it into practice and you realize that you're dealing with real human beings and real lives and situations that can't always be accounted for on a piece of paper.
Absolutely. And for the IBEW, what we've been experiencing, IBEW, we are trained, we are apprenticed as electricians to inspect locomotives before they go out of the shop and ensure that they can haul the freight that they need to haul, right? And we go through a mentorship program. A journey-level electrician teaches us our craft, and then we hone our skills. And we're true professional. We're craftsmen, men and women for this.
If I could stop you for a second, one of the most incredible educational opportunities young people could possibly have is to get into one of these apprenticeship programs and learn this skill.
Absolutely. And the industry has cut so many of us. Now they're trying to do more with other employees who have not experienced the same level of training and education. So when you are inspecting a locomotive for an electrical issue, that really should be an electrician doing it. Nobody else should be signing off on that work. They need to fill the role the way that they need, that they should be, so that these are inspected, safe locomotives moving freight. And because of the cuts in the industry, we have been seeing some of that work being dissipated to other employees, which is not right. It should not be happening. That's not how you have a safe workplace.
Or what I've heard, it just being pencil whipped along. Now, you talk about inspections, and you're trained to do these inspections. You know, I had one of the smart union guys on here not too long ago saying that, you know, they got like 90 seconds to inspect a train car, which, you know, as a truck driver who does, you know, 30-minute pre-trips on a set of doubles, 90 seconds to look over a train car. Just, I'm sorry, I'm not seeing how you're getting, you know, even the overview, let alone getting into the nuts and bolts of things. Is that your experience on what's happened to inspections over the years, that they've slashed the amount of time that's been available, and also the quality of people doing them?
I wouldn't say the quality. I would say the time. I would say the amount of time in between inspections. It used to be industry standard inspections, so as many inspections as we need to ensure the equipment is running properly and that we're not going to overload the equipment. But now they have to turn these locomotives out so fast that things are being overlooked. And I have never once pulled a locomotive into a shop and there wasn't a trouble ticket on that locomotive. Something is wrong. Anytime, because it's just the nature of mechanical things. Yep. Like, you're going to have to change brushes, you're going to have to change brake pads, you're going to have to update software. Things break, things need updated, and you need the people available, and you need to have the right amount of time to get the locomotive in, refresh it, and then send it back out. And that just doesn't seem to be a priority anymore. It's just get it out. Don't care if we need software update, get it out.
It's all about the cash. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Danielle Eckert. She's the Director of Government Affairs with the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Check out their website, IBEWGOV.org is Danielle's site. You know, I want to get your thoughts, because again, you're talking about the inspection time being cut, the people who are doing these inspections being changed a little bit, which I've heard, and having some people who may not be as qualified as I would prefer doing these things. You know, last Thursday and Friday, while the world was watching, you know, the billionaires in the propane tank going down to the Titanic, mm-hmm. I was watching the hearings with the NTSB in East Palestine. You know, talking about the train wreck that happened there. And a big part of this stuff, in my view, is this hurry, this rush, the way they're now, loading these trains. There's some stuff there. There's a lot with this industry that's not being overseen. And it's, I got to tell you, from a safety standpoint, as someone who doesn't want to see another East Palestine, I think we're, to use a railroad term, on the wrong track.
I will say, whenever I was working in a shop, safety was number one. If it took you 4 hours to do a job that typically took 1 hour because there is an issue that causing you to take a little bit longer, but it was going to be a quality product in the end, then that was of utmost importance. That is no longer the case. It's get it out. You're supposed to only have 2 hours to do this job. Why is it taking you 4 hours? And there are so many different locomotives. There are so many different modifications. You need to have the extra time to take a breath, step back, analyze the situation, especially in electrical craft, and then ensure that you are putting in the most effort that you need to be putting in to ensure that all these communities are safe across the United States. The trains run in their communities as well. So we need to return to what the priority should be in the industry, and that is safety. That is safety. Yes, we want railroad carriers to make profits. They've been making profits for years. They'll make profits long after I'm gone. But cutting safety and putting people at risk is not the way to do that. So how do we get there? Human beings.
Let me ask you this, because how do we get there? I mean, I look at the Biden administration took an awful beating over the fact that they didn't impose sick days. I would have preferred them to put that in the congressional, in the congressional outcome that sick days had to be there, because it's the railroads are wildly profitable. It's insane that they don't have sick days for these working people. But how do we get to that point to where maybe where we were in the past? Because I've heard, people pine for the good old days. And I say, we had problems back then. Can we take what was good about the good old days and make them better in the future? So how do we get to this place where I think we all want safe trains, good jobs, good careers for people, move things efficiently, and of course the railroads making their profit as they have to? How do we get there?
Well, I think that, and nobody could really argue that President Biden and the administration, they're experienced negotiators, right? And in our opinion, they played the long game. It was going to be difficult to get some people on the side of giving railroaders six days. I mean, we saw that in the vote. There were, people who voted that down. So what we have been experiencing as advocates of the labor community, and especially our rail director, who couldn't make it today, but has tirelessly pushed on the administration, pushed on agencies. This is something that is incredibly popular. It is un-American that railroaders don't have sick days. And whenever there was an opportunity to push pressure on the carriers, reminding them that they have benefits whenever they go to the administration. They benefit from EPA programs, DOT programs. They get their locomotives overhauled. It doesn't take much to be like, where are you at on treating your workers the right way? Do they have sick days? Is this safe? Do we need to do a report? And that's something that the Biden-Harris administration remains on top of industry. Are you treating people well? Are they getting what they need to survive? And I have never seen that let up, ever, ever. Our advocates are tireless, ensuring that we still have two holdouts for sick days, ensuring that we keep the pressure on. We remind the administration to keep the pressure on. And it's never a no. You're right. This needs to get done. So that's how we have been approaching it moving forward. And it's all about advocacy. If you're quiet, if you're just going to let things occur, you have to advocate on your behalf. So, you have to reach out to those who oversee that industry and tell them what's happening. That's where we're at right now. We need people to reach out and advocate on.
That's great. I mean, so what do you say? This is kind of where I want to wrap things up a little bit. Because like I said at the beginning, I got a lot of people go, well, what about, Biden screwed over those workers, wouldn't let them strike, all of this stuff, and really attack the administration because the railroads refused to give the workers sick days. Is there a defense in this moment for them? Because I follow up with, look, if Trump was still president, if he had been reelected, there wouldn't have been a conversation. It would have been, just done. There would be no sick days, and he probably would have gotten a lot worse than what they actually got. Is there a defense here, or does the Biden-Harris administration, do they deserve some kind of a spanking?
I would say our concern during these negotiations is you're pretty much once we we're at an impasse, you're handing Congress a pen to write your contract, and that could be anybody. It's great to have your personal opinions, your opinions on social issues, but when you're handing somebody a pen to write your contract, who do you want that to be? And the reality is, there just wasn't enough friends to make that happen. You're taking a gamble. Which side is going to write your contract? What is your preference? That's really a gamble when you're handing them the pen. If that isn't really ironed out, what you think is going to happen? And I will say for IBEW submitted a ratification vote before this all occurred, and members voted to ratify that contract. So it could just throw a wrench into everything, and you never know what could be taken away if you're just going to give them a carte blanche you know, here you go. Figure it out for us, Congress.
No, it's an excellent point, though. Who do you want writing the contract? And, you know, I say all the time, working people. I look at the Republican Party. You know, Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do. And do you want them? You want Trump and them having the pen? That's an excellent point, and I appreciate that. But, Danielle, I appreciate the thoughts. Congratulations. Good on you and the members. Good victory. I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thanks so much. Danielle Eckert, IBEW's Director of Government Affairs. Check out their website, IBEWGOV.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. And listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, good news. Again, I give credit to the IBEW for continuing that fight. And look, at the end of the day, I still think where we need to be going is a movement to ensure that all working people have access to time off to be able to take care of family needs, especially in this economy where it's no longer one income doesn't suffice. And I would argue we're past two incomes being what's needed to survive. We're almost we need three incomes to make ends meet. And if that's the case, there's no one. I mean, the good old days, you know, someone could take care of the home and someone did the work and things got done, things got accomplished. But if you know, everybody's working and multiple jobs, you know, we should be moving towards more paid time off. Especially as, you know, there's talk of AI, there's talk of, you know, robotics and automation and all of this productivity gain that's going to happen because I again look at where we're heading. And this is where, you know, for me, having strong labor unions to be able to fight and you know, slow things down a little bit is important. You know, as we rush towards the AI future, as we rush towards the robotic future, what happens to working people? What happens to the jobs that are going to be lost? You know, we talk about the study from several years ago that said, you know, in 20 years, half of the jobs that we do will be gone. They'll be done by robots or computers or someone else, but not by people earning a wage. What do all of those people do in the frictional transition? What do working people do when your whole life was learning this skill? You're 50 some years old. You're a decade away from retirement. And Republicans want to keep pushing that further down the road. What do you do with folks? What do you do as a matter of public policy? Yeah, I get the whole idea that the smart people win. They get all the money. They get all the productivity gains. They line their pockets. We have gazillionaires and we have, you know, paupers, you know, begging on the street corner. That's going to be our future if we don't get policy right. And while we're fighting over ridiculous stuff, we're not doing anything to move us in a positive direction on the other stuff. In fact, we're not even addressing it in a serious manner. And this is the frustration.
because the dog and pony show we see in D.C. or in state capitals across the country, you know, you name the distraction. It's all about keeping us away from what really needs to get done. And that's creating an economy where families can exist. And this is going to be one of these things. In 3 or 4 years, we're going to look back and go, wow, we got duped. We wasted all of that time over nonsense fights that didn't really affect, you know, our lives. But now, by not doing X, Y, and Z, now we're screwed. And that's my concern, that we're going to wake up one day and it's going to be gone. It's going to be over. And there is no going back because, you know, we're not Luddites. We're not going to smash the machine. And this is where, you know, having, you know, these characters in Congress who don't have a clue on how to legislate. They know how to get attention. They know how to get attention. They want a popularity contest. But they don't know what they're doing. That's going to be trouble. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1893. That was the day that Illinois Governor John Peter Altgeld pardoned Samuel Fielden, Oscar Niebe, and Michael Schwab, who were imprisoned for their alleged role in the Haymarket bombing of 1886. 8 men had been accused of throwing a bomb at a workers' rally in Chicago. 4 were hung, 1 died in prison before he could be executed, and 3 were incarcerated. Governor Altgeld had been born in Germany. He was a progressive leader who helped pass worker safety laws and child labor laws. Efforts to free the 3 Haymarket prisoners had been underway since their sentencing. During the trial, there was no physical evidence linking any of the accused men to the crime. Governor Altgeld agreed to look into the case. He issued a report outlining his findings. At the end, he concluded, quote, "The trial was not fair." He wrote, quote, "I'm convinced that it is clearly my duty to act. I grant an absolute pardon to Samuel Fielden, Oscar Niebe, and Michael Schwab this 26th day of June, 1893. This pardon came just one day after a monument to the martyrs was dedicated at the cemetery where the 5 martyrs were buried. Today, part of Governor Altgeld's pardon is inscribed on a plaque on the backside of that monument. Governor Altgeld paid a political price for the pardon. He was attacked by the press. The Chicago Tribune attacked his German heritage, declaring there was, quote, "not a drop of true American blood in his veins. He does not reason like an American, does not feel like one, and consequently does not behave like one." In 1896, he lost his bid at re-election for standing up for justice. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
In Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, Humpty Dumpty scornfully declares that when I use a word, it means just what I choose it to mean. So what does woke mean? It's become the pet political aspersion that today's kooky right-wing hucksters hurl at liberals. But the hurlers would be whopper-jawed to learn that it was actually coined by and for progressives. Indeed, it admonishes people to be awake to the dangers posed by hate-filled bigots and reactionaries like, well, like today's right-wing extremists. Surprising historical tidbit. The first person reported to have used the word was Huddy Ledbetter, the legendary black blues artist known as Leadbelly. Among his many classic songs was Scottsboro Boys, about 9 black teenagers falsely accused in 1931 of raping 2 Alabama white women. As a black musician who traveled the back roads of the Jim Crow South, Leadbelly warned others to pay attention when in a viciously racist state. Best stay woke, he cautioned. But out of blind ignorance, blind arrogance, or both, today's adapters of the Jim Crow mentality have perverted common sense wokeness into a verbal whip to lash African Americans, immigrants, Democrats, women, LGBTQ people, and all others they don't like. Pretty much everyone who looks, thinks, prays, and acts different from them. How kooky? They've declared librarians, science, Mickey Mouse, and Bud Light to be their evil enemies. Don't be woke, they bark, demanding autocratic, plutocratic, and theocratic laws to coerce compliance with their own retrogressive bigotries. This is Jim Hightower saying, bear in mind that this is no longer a fringe cult, but the mainstream of the Republican Party, including its top congressional leaders, presidential wannabes, and state officials. Actually, you can easily comprehend what these Humpty Dumpties really mean by their Don't Be Woke war cry. Just substitute the word sane for woke.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, entertainment from the Marjorie Three Name crowd. Evidently, her TV spying on her. Yeah, she tweeted that out. She said, last night in my D.C. residence, the television turned on by itself. Possibly she sat on the remote, but you know, never mind. She said the screen showed someone's laptop trying to connect to the TV. I'm not even going to go there. Now, you know, you go, oh, dude, she's being, do I know that nobody was trying to get into there? I don't know. But it seems weird that she would tweet this out. Seems more of the victim stuff. The, hey, poor, pitiful me, the martyr stuff. That's this whole crowd. Anyway, here, let's find out what happened today in the wide world in D.C. I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst Bob Ney to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So, what do you think? turning on the TV. You know, someone remotely wants to look in on Marjorie Three Names. She claims she's not vaccinated. She doesn't take any medicine. She's not concerned about blood clots or heart conditions or stroke. I'm not quite sure what that rambling was about, but hey, someone's watching.
But it didn't have anything to do with the spy TV. And, you know, they're trying to throw her out of the Freedom Caucus. Now, I want you to think about this. She's too nuts for them.
Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty crazy.
And the weird thing is, you know, she's got this thing that they're out to get her. And nobody on the Democratic side is out to get her. I want her there. I said this from the very beginning, and you know I said this. They should have never thrown her off of a committee. They should have put her right out in front, right in the front row with all of the spotlights and given her all the attention that she wants because she comes up with gems like this.
Yeah. I talked to a Republican consultant. He came through the area the other day, and he brought up the issue that, you know, they just wish she would go away, you know. She just is sucking the air out of almost just like one person here, sucking the air out of the agenda that they would like to have. And her theatrics is just, you know, it gets press attention. I mean, the TV thing, it's so bizarre. It's just so bizarre. You know, it came on by itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read that and I go, that's happened to me. It has. Mm-hmm. The TV came on all by itself. Now, granted, I sat on the remote. But what I didn't mean to do it, so it came on all by itself, Bob.
Oh, my. I don't know. I don't know what to think.
I do. Crazy.
I mean, I was thinking back, Democrat and Republican, to my 11 years, all right? And I can't recall one member either side of the aisle as bad as she is.
Nope.
Neither side of the aisle. I mean, there were some people out there that were, you know, little, you know, 15 cents short of a quarter, but nothing like her. Nothing like her. Yeah, she takes the cake.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, this is the leader of the Republican Party. There she is, because as you said, she's sucking all the air out of the room and showing the fact that they don't have an agenda.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So I wanted to get your thoughts.
Which chills them with their base, by the way.
Yeah.
So.
Well, talking about their base, over the weekend they had the Faith and Freedom Coalition Conference, of which Trump was adorned. Which is weird to me. I mean, I look at him and, you know, these are the people who want the Ten Commandments plastered everywhere. And here's a guy who, if you plaster them everywhere, he's going to break every one of them on purpose. I don't get why they are so enamored with this guy. But there they were, the faithful cheering on the martyr. And he did play the martyr.
I'm being indicted for you. I was waiting for the crown of thorns and the cross to come out.
Mm-hmm. You know, Chris Christie got booed there, by the way.
He did.
Yeah, he got booed, of course, because he said something about Trump. Trump highlighted abortion and the Supreme Court decision, and then of course Christie got booed, and then I guess today, and I didn't know this, but there's talk that Trump won't debate possibly.
No, I don't see why he would. Yeah, I believe he's declining. And I see the same thing about Biden. Look, I love Biden. I think he's doing the right things. I love the policy. Debates. If I'm his campaign guy, I'm not putting him on a debate stage.
Well, of course.
So I think both of them are declining, and nobody wants to be on that debate stage because they're so far ahead. They can only lose.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. My mindset was, when I was running, I had this opponent who had zero traction, right? And so my campaign manager was like, this is great. And we knew they were going to challenge me to a debate. So my campaign manager was coming up with all these stinks to say, right? So he was gone for half the day, and I went ahead and told a reporter, yeah, I'm going to debate. And he came back and he flipped out. And he's like, are you trying to lose the election? I said, no. I ended up challenging the guy to a debate.
Yeah. No, there's a difference here, Bob.
10% of the vote. I was bored that day. I don't know. I did it.
But there's a difference. You can deliver a line. You had something to say. I look at both of them, and I think Trump is declining a lot more than what we're seeing. And I think Biden is declining as well. Look, I know he's always had problems getting things out, and I think that's only getting worse.
Yeah.
But again,
plus Kennedy did the push-up thing too. 10 million people watched it.
Yeah, you know who cares less about RFK Jr. than I do?
Who?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Absolutely nobody.
Well, but look here. This is funny, and you'll get a kick out of this, I think. I get a phone call today, and then it's before I went on a couple of the radio stations. And then later I get some friends that message me, and they're like, well, don't you think he does have a chance, doesn't he? He's a Kennedy.
No.
And I said, well, that's what I said. And on radio I said, too, look, JFK, Ted Kennedy, and John F. Kennedy Jr., they were their beloved, JFK Jr. could have ran for something. I said, but the Kennedys that kind of came after them in Congress and things, no, they're not. They don't have traction within the Democratic Party, But I actually got that quite well. He's a Kennedy. And I said, I don't care. He's not going to beat the president. So,
well, I mean, Kennedy does start with K, and I do think he's a kook. So that's as close as that's where I put this together. I think the only thing, he's a kook.
Well, have you ever read his conspiracy on me?
No, he's got a conspiracy on you. You too.
Who's the guy? Not Morgan Freeman. Who's the guy that played in Shawshank Redemption? The other star besides Morgan Freeman.
I don't remember.
Carol may know this, but anyway, Tim Robbins.
Oh yeah, Tim Robbins. Okay.
Okay. So I'm shopping one night, and a former employee of mine calls me. He's like, "Tim Robbins is attacking you on the Chris Matthews show or something. He's attacking you viciously." I'm like, "For what?" And he said, "For fixing the presidential election." Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has, dig this, a theory that I got the Democrats, which would have included Ted Kennedy, to do the Help America Vote Act, and then I fixed the election in 2004 that put George Bush in office. Now, had that happened, there's two different ways this would have went. Number one,
you wouldn't have gone to jail.
I wouldn't have gone to Bush's federal prison. And number two, although I love doing your show, I would have probably been in Switzerland with my $30 million in the Swiss bank account, okay?
And your 22-year-old girlfriend.
Yeah, right, right. I still would have called from Switzerland to your show, though. You know, but he's come up. It's online. He's come up with this.
So was this while he was doing heroin or after?
I don't know. Maybe to think of that stuff, I don't know. Maybe he was doing something else. I'm not sure.
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, here's a guy who's, you know, he's the black sheep of the family, and that's okay too. I'm not a huge Kennedy's fan. Teddy mm-hmm. Kennedy was behind some of the worst legislation that we've ever had. But you know, the family that basically told him don't. And I my mindset is he's being propped up by right wing money when he's taking pictures with Michael Flynn and Roger Stone. Come on.
Sure. Absolutely. And I think they funneled money to him, and then they're going to spend independent PAC money. And if he says one thing about the president, that goes into the PAC commercials. You know how that runs.
Yep. I want to get your thoughts on the Supreme Court today. Evidently, the decision that isn't horrible on the Louisiana congressional districts.
Right, right. Now, of course, they have on their docket about, I think, 10 actual, you know, big issues, which I don't know. Do you know when they take the break? I didn't look that up.
End of the
month.
They got to the end of the month to dump everything.
Okay, to the end of the month. And so, you know, they allow for the... they're allowing for the Louisiana congressional map to be redone to add another majority black district, you know, African-American minority district. So it's allowing them to redraw it. And so they reversed their plans to hear the case themselves. And then they lifted some type of hold they had on the lower court is how they did it. And there were no dissents, none, which is very, very interesting.
Yeah,
and
not even Alito.
Right.
Do you think Alito's, you know, walking around with his tail between his legs at this moment after his pre-buttal went down in flames so badly?
Possibly. Yeah, possibly.
I mean, can you imagine? I mean, I'm the arrogance to put something like that out?
Nothing these days amazes me. I mean, it's just—it's unbelievable.
Just remarkable to me. Mm-hmm. Listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Bob Nay. Bob's a political analyst, former Ohio congressman. I got to get your thoughts on Ohio. Evidently, the Supreme Court today also cleared the way for lawsuits to be brought by more than 100 people who say they were abused by a medical doctor there at Ohio State University. Are you surprised by this?
No, that was one of the, that was one of the absolutely worst cases that, that we've seen in a long time. It was just absolutely horrific, and it went on and on and on. And so they're going to let, the lawsuit be there over the team's doctor.
Right.
And I thought it was, you know, a good decision.
Now, this doctor's been dead since 2005.
Right.
We're not getting anything out of him.
But, yeah, but it's going to allow more than 230 people to sue, actually, Ohio State University. And, yes, he's dead. Dr. Strauss is dead. But I imagine, frankly, that the university has insurance anyway. So it's not going to come out of tuition, you know.
So the taxpayers aren't going to be on the hooks for
this. They don't pay that much to reduce tuition anyway.
No, there's
out of their foundation.
No, that's true as well.
What
do you think of the story that, you know, they're going to start making the student debt people start paying back the student debt and the possibility that this could trigger a recession? Any thoughts?
Well, I think that there's going to be a lot of, especially right now, there's going to be a lot of defaults. I mean, I know, it will all end. And, of course, the Supreme Court, is taking up the case. But I think there'll just be a lot of defaults. Right now, it's just tough for people to, balance a lot of things. And with the costs of food, gasoline, and products, And I think also, Rick, that a lot of people, I believe, thought, okay, this is going to happen. We're not going to have to worry. So I don't think they really set aside anything to take care of it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And again, I look at the fact that as I started today off, we've got a situation where you've got builders and you've got destroyers. And the Republicans right now seem to be the destroyers. You know, every position that they're standing on is about making things worse. And this issue being one of those.
Because, you know, look, everybody's bracing for this, you know, for the decision and things. But with the Republicans, you would think that they would want to at least have an extension, you know, let's get through, you know, inflation. Eventually inflation, you know, tames itself down and you know, let's get through that, because the repayments would start in October. And that's been after the pandemic paused everything. And this is like the last piece of it, of the whole student loan issue. So the borrowers, of course, are afraid that this is it, and then they'll be forced to go into further debt or try to, you know, go get a loan. And we all know what's happened to the Fed Reserve over 11 times, raising the interest rate. So this is like the worst time due to the interest rate increase on top of it if you want to borrow money.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. And as I said, the beginning, my idea has always been that the federal government should buy up the student loans and you pay them back. You pay back what you borrowed, 0.5% interest to cover the cost of administration or whatever that's going to be. But this idea that you're going to end up, you know, after 10 years owing more than you borrowed is just plain insane.
Right, exactly. And again, interest rates have raised through the Fed. And so people that maybe want to go borrow some money to try to pay this are going to be paying higher interest because, as you know, when they tell you it's a certain interest rate, or if they put it on their credit card,
yeah,
you know, that can be something else under the sun, 17, 21, 24%.
No, it's crazy how just
they'll never pay that credit card off.
No, and that's the point. they get you, and you never get out of it.
Never.
But Bob, as always, appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1894. That was the day the American Railway Union, led by Eugene V. Debs, voted to support the boycott of Chicago's Pullman Palace cars. The nation was gripped by an economic depression. The Pullman workers were on strike because the company had severely slashed their wages. But Pullman had not reduced the workers' rent payments in his company town. When the American Railway Union held its convention in Chicago that June, the Pullman workers attended. They were determined to win the union's support. One of the Pullman workers who spoke during the union's convention was a young woman named Jenny Curtis. Jenny was a seamstress at Pullman. Her father had also worked for the company for 13 years. He had grown ill and could not work during the final months of his life. He died owing $60 in back rent to the company. Jenny had to pay off his back rent along with her own board. Then, wages were slashed. Jenny became the leader of the ladies' union at Pullman Local 209. She addressed the railroad union meeting with passion and emotion, saying, "We struck at Mr. Pullman because we were without hope. We joined the American Railway Union because it gave us a glimmer of hope. 20,000 souls, men, women, and little ones, have their eyes turned toward this convention today. And thus, the merry war, the dance of skeletons bathed in human tears, goes on. And it will go on, brothers, forever, unless you, the American Railway Union, stop it, end it, crush it out. And so I say, come along with us for decent conditions everywhere." The American Railway Union voted to support the boycott, but the effort was brutally crushed by federal troops, resulting in the deaths of 24 workers. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Here's one of my favorite stories of the day. South Dakota State Representative Joe Donnell. Joe evidently was doing a radio program, and you got to say something that's you know, interesting, something to get attention. So he said that Mount Rushmore is a demonic portal. Yeah, in fact, the quote goes, even Donald Trump landing in the Black Hills of Mount Rushmore on July 4th, when Governor Kristi Noem put out the message that fireworks are returning to South Dakota, that was a prophetic word, he said. And I kind of got the feeling that what we were really dealing with in the portal was communism, that witchcraft altar, and those things that are happening in the Black Hills. What we're really dealing with is communism. It's the ideology and all the demonic entities and spirits behind it. Yeah, Mount Rushmore is all of that. All of it. And the weird thing is, he brought up Trump, and Trump wanted to be on Mount Rushmore. Wow. That's all I keep coming back to. Wow. How did these people get elected? Who ran against this guy? How bad did you have to be where people go, yeah, we want the demonic guy. Give me that guy. Let me get a quick couple of emails in. Brian sent me an email, said, Rick, I heard you talk about RFK Jr. Uh-oh, here we go. And while I agree he's not fit for president, he is fit to do push-ups. Don't you think the kook label is a bit extreme? No, I don't. Answer that. He does bend towards conspiracy, but he does make some points that need to be addressed on vaccines. No, I don't agree at all. Not even a little bit. Sorry. Kook. He's kook there. I have no more for him. And the idea that we're going to put him on the same plane as Joe Biden or on Peter Hotez is insane. And it goes back to what I said earlier, the idea of you can't debate or have a conversation with a destroyer. RFK Jr. is a destroyer. Now, the weird thing is, you want a conspiracy theory? You want something that no one's talking about? How much right-wing money is going into propping up this kook? How much right-wing money is pushing to put him on the debate stage with Biden? Biden would be an idiot to stand on the stage with him and to give him any recognition whatsoever, because he's, you know, they talk about, you know, politics being a circle and the right and the left meeting at the bottom. He's at the bottom. He's the worst of both worlds. Figure that one out. Also got an email from Sandy in Santa Fe. Says, Rick, is the Supreme Court finally hearing the discontent of the people? Another voting rights case going the right way for democracy. First Alabama, now Louisiana. I'm not going to go with you on this, Sandy. I don't think that they care about the people so much. I have to read more into why they decided this. I know there was no dissent, which is weird, but we still have a week to see just how bad our Supreme Court is going to be on, you know, important things like student debt relief, affirmative action, election, federal election laws. There's a lot to come. And evidently there are still 10 cases, as I understand it, that are pending, that have serious consequence. So this idea that there's going to be that about face, you know, the old switch in nine to save the old switch in time to save nine. Not seeing it. So nah, they come back and they uphold the law as it has been in these other cases. I don't know. Maybe I'll know better at the end of the week. Maybe John Roberts pulled them all into a cloakroom and gave them what for. Maybe Papa whipped out the belt and gave him a spanking. I don't know. And maybe, you know, Thomas and Alito liked it. Who knows? But going to be an interesting week to see where they come down on some of these other important issues. Just because the blind squirrel found a nut doesn't mean that they're going to find their way home. And I don't see this Supreme Court doing anything for working people that would be helpful. So that's where that is. I appreciate the emails. If you have any questions, comments, thoughts, something on your mind, something you want to get a